Well, I was doing my usual routine of going to work. For some reason, my car was out of commission on that morning, and my wife took me to the surgery a bit late. We arrived in the car park. I got out of the car, heard an almighty crumping noise in the distance, and I thought, I'm pretty sure I know what that is. And so I went into the surgery and dialed the switchboard at the barracks, spoke to a chap, and I said, "Hello, this is Dr. Rawlings ringing you from down the road. Have you got a problem up there?" And he said, "I think we have, sir." So I said, "Okay, I'll come up." And at the same time, I was with my colleague, Dr. John Sharville, and we jumped into his car and raced off up the Strand at Hell for Leather, turned into the barracks. There was absolutely no sign of anything happening until we got through the gates. Nobody tried to stop us. We went straight in, turned right, down to the site of the bombing. The whole of the parade ground was empty. We were the only vehicle, and as far as I could see at the time, we were the only people who were from outside. It's all a bit of a blur, frankly, after 20-something years, but we just dumped the car and ran and found the scene of the action. And I have to say, even for a hardened ex-military doctor, it was quite a sight. There was clearly a scene of a massive explosion. There was smoke, dust, noise of people, flames coming out of gas pipes, water pouring everywhere, arcing cables. It was just as one has been led to believe things look after a bomb's gone off. There was order. I don't quite know what had happened in the sort of 5 to 10 minutes that had taken us between the bomb exploding and us arriving. I don't know what had happened, but within seconds, I think we'd been pinged by some hardened Royal Marines who knew me and knew what I did for a living, and I was just more or less being called from here to there to by rescuers, diggers, come here, Doc, and have a look at this. John Sharville was diverted to a casualty who was alive. I can't speak exactly for what he did or what the situation was, but he was occupied with this chap, and his casualty was actually taken by ambulance, and John went with him to the Buckland Hospital. I didn't see John at all after we arrived, but I was just busily rushing around in my street clothes, a pair of very lightweight loafers, clambering over rubble, really looking into dark holes and saying, "I think that chap is probably beyond help," being asked really to confirm whether we should or should not be attempting to rescue the obvious casualties. I think it appeared to me that most of the surviving injured had either under their own steam or by rescuers had been removed from the scene pretty quickly. We did find, in the course of three or four hours, we did find living casualties with whom we dealt. But there was rather, unfortunately, and as we all know, there were a lot of bodies, lots of bits of bodies, and it was a pretty grim scene.
Were you aware, as you were doing all this, that eventually that the fire service had arrived pretty quickly, fire and rescue?
To be honest, it's very strange. I can remember very little about what was going on around me. I think I was completely and utterly... I didn't even realise. I didn't suppose for one minute that there was any risk to me or to anybody else who was still there. I don't think we even considered that we might get blown up ourselves, but I suppose there was that theoretical possibility. So I think I was a bit sort of targeted. There were lots and lots of people milling around, and it became more and more evident, and I'll tell you our last impression as we left the site. But there were more and more people around, and there were certainly guys in fluorescent jackets and crash helmets and gear, but I couldn't tell you who they all were, and it was a very, very controlled but very active and quite a frightening scene, frankly.
But as you identified the casualty and said yes or no, did you have a sort of a casualty collecting point, or what?
I know that I spent a great deal of time clambering over rubble and going to smoky corners and being asked. There's a chap called Bill Maddox who was a coroner's officer, and he was on the scene, and the police or somebody knew who I was, and I became the doctor who was involved in confirming death effectively and allowing them to move casualties, bodies away from the rubble into a collecting point.
People have said that considering the circumstances, there was quite an air of organised chaos of bleak calm.
The sad truth is that they were either, it seemed to me anyway, as a doctor and trying to see what I could do to help, it seemed to me that they were either dead or they weren't, in the way. And as I said earlier, I think most of the casualties had either got themselves out of the way or had been taken away very, very quickly.
You reckon within minutes of being there you'd identified the first dead?
Sure.
I mean, as you arrived, you could see there were people.
There were clearly dead guys, yeah. Some of whom, of course, one I knew, because as well as having been fairly recently, I mean, it was 6 years previously, but it's surprising in a town the size of Deal that one knows people anyway. And I looked after the families of some of the boys who died, and I knew the guys who died, and yeah. So
you were involved right through for how long?
I should imagine that I eventually left the site at about 1 o'clock. I think the official side of the scenario was clearly that one had to establish that people were beyond help, then try to remove their remains into a quiet place where they could be identified and so on and so forth. I can remember that I was asked to go and look at all the deceased in a building where they were all lying on the ground. I mean, I'd already supervised and offered advice about the removal of remains. I was asked to look along the whole line of the 10 guys on the ground and say, dead, 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 dead. And I could also, as it happened, I could identify at least 3 of them. You know, there was no doubt in anybody's mind that they were dead.
But you actually remember them from your time?
Certainly, yeah. Well, I looked after the family of Dean Pavey. His little son was a patient of mine at the practice, and so on and so forth. It was pretty bracing stuff. And
were you really the only doctor on site?
I wasn't. No, doctors did arrive. I can remember an orthopaedic surgeon arriving from Canterbury in a white coat and a surgical mask. With a team of a registrar and a houseman, I think. They were the casualty team from somewhere. Disaster team, one imagines. And he sort of sauntered up and said, is there anything I can do, Keith? And I said, well, to be honest with you, Martin, I don't think there is, but, wait until somebody calls you. I did actually assist actively with one lad, and I don't know who he was, and I would probably quite like to know that he was all right. One lad who'd been stood in his changing room in front of a locker, and the blast had blown him into the locker, and he had hit his face in the shelving at the top of the locker, and he was conscious. He had a very nasty facial skull injury, and he was down a deep dark hole, as one would imagine. And I put an intravenous line into his hand and gave him some analgesia and chatted to him. And then when everybody decided he was all right, I got oiked off to somewhere else. And I don't know who that lad was, but anyway, he would have survived, I'm sure.
What medical kit would you have had?
I had
with
none.
You?
I had no gear.
So when
at
you start
all,
putting in a line, where's that?
It came from an ambulance team, I would think. Yeah.